When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
There have been two major stories on the World Service agenda this week. The ongoing drama around last Sunday's Ireland club final between Glenn and Kilmacud Crokes.
Anti-Dublin bias is the biggest load of bollocks.
There we are. Number two is the Oscar nomination received by a member of the Murph household this week. Yes, you heard that second one correctly. John Murphy, brother of this guy.
Faye Dunaway
is the editor of On Cotley. See, it's just a movie family in Hollywood.
We're steeped in it, we really are.
Is the editor.
This is the natural end point of our entire upbringing. Yes.
To a certain extent. Of On Colleen Kuhne, nominated for Best International Film at the Academy Awards.
That's the Oscars. They go under two names. One is the Oscars, the other is the more formal title of the Academy Awards. But be under no doubt whatsoever, Owen, this is the biggest. This is the biggest movie awards ceremony out there.
Yeah, and some would say the best.
Been going since 1927, no?
Yeah, no.
An uninterrupted run.
Golden Globes, I mean.
Come on, will you?
Come on. So yeah, John Murphy is heavily involved in all this, and he's also a Man United fan, is therefore one step closer to seeing the end of his 6-year trophy drought.
Well, it's all coming up John Murphy this week.
It really is. And you know, he's off the Anthony Elanga train. He's on the Facundo Palestra in a major, major way.
Facundo Palestra.
Oh, he's all about it. He's all about Palestra. Speaking of the Oscars, actually, there was one little detail from Tuesday, from my day spent in Milltown on Tuesday, the day of the nominations, that I didn't bring to you.
Oh, go for it. Listen,
yes,
this is
only afterwards I was thinking.
Oscars, it's the Oscars. You can give the whole week to it if you want.
So we went to Sheridan to celebrate. Went for dinner there with Cahal. Beautiful dinner, of course.
Cahal
Sheridan. Call in anytime you like, as you're driving through Milltown. He's just the owner of Sheridan's Bar on the top of the hill in Milltown.
Okay.
And we sat there and we politely did not mention John's Oscar nomination, just out of, you know, because like that's the Murphys, you know, we hide our light under a bushel, of course, you know.
I wonder what you were doing out and about, though, in the first place.
Dad's 75th birthday.
Of course.
Very easy.
It was planned. It was already planned. Yeah. Sure.
So we were, after that, we went to Ryan's just go in and buy a pint of milk, you know. So Paul goes in anyway, my brother Paul, and he goes in and there's two of the Ryans are in there and another lady from the village as well, and they all turn around and go, Paul, we heard the news about the movie. John had something to do with that, didn't he? And Paul was like, oh yeah, he directed it or something. Listen, you know, he's in there, he's certainly in there, of course, you know. And then so the three women are talking to him for like 5 minutes about how great it is. And, oh, isn't it absolutely amazing? And tell him congratulations from everyone in Milltown. And well done again. Isn't it absolutely brilliant? And Paul was like, okay, fair enough. So he was kind of half moving to the till just to, you know, get the transaction taken care of. But there was a big pause in the conversation. And then, And then one of the women just said, God, that Banshees of Inisherin was an awful pile of shit.
And then the other two women started agreeing furiously with her. Oh, my God, which was the greatest waste of time. Oh, absolutely useless. Oh, terrible now, terrible. So I love that.
I am in agreement with those women.
I just love how those women were going through the motions of congratulating a local lad done good through his brother, when all they really wanted to talk about was how shite the Colin Farrell movie is.
The conversation just naturally broadened out to include other movies in the Oscar shakeup.
Maybe it was just I'm ascribing too much forethought to the exchange. Maybe it was more just they
said all they wanted to
say. And then there was the silence. It was almost like, what do you do then? There's only so much you can say. It's congratulations. And then it's like, well, what about that other big Irish movie that's nominated for Oscars and so on. As for Chemical Croaks, Ken has been leading the charge to have them thrown out of the club championship for fielding a 16th man.
What about that? Send him off!
As much as we value Ken's thoughts on Gaelic Games administration matters, we thought we'd also call in the expertise of Michael Foley from the Sunday Times, as well as our regular brilliant analyst, Paul Flynn.
From my own perspective, I've nothing against Croaks. I know loads of Croaks people, and I was cheering for Croaks, right? Because I really love Paul Mannion and Rory O'Carroll, right? So I wanted to see them lads get over the line. Yet, I still struggle with the fact that they had 16 men on the pitch at the end. I just think it's such a fundamental... And I go back to the analogy I gave earlier on about the Arsenal United game. Like, just think about it for a second. Like, you can't have 12 on the pitch. You can't have 16 on the pitch. And you can't have one of them on the bloody goal line when the team are going for a goal. Like, I just... So I struggle with it, even though I have nothing against Croaks. So I think that, you know, you might have had a bit of people on the fence, you know, but I think it's universal because of the fact that people can kind of understand that you just can't, it's just not okay, as well as the Croak stuff.
It's kind of like, it's funny, like the reaction to this, it's pure Liveline stuff, like, you know, it's pure... put it this way, right? The amount of people that are so outraged and exercised about this now and for the last couple of days, most of them won't give a flying fazoo what the result is in this rematch. That there'll be no one at the match compared to the amount of people who are interested in it now, right? And it's just like, I was a bit like Paul. I was like, am I outraged? I'm kind of out of rage. I don't really, like... And I do think the Kilmacud thing plays into it. And for what I know of Kilmacud over the last, God, when was the first? Actually, Kilmacud was one of the first clubs I ever covered in this job, like 20-something years ago. So all the years dealing with them and kind of reflecting on their journey and how they've made, you know, what they've done with the club, they've done so much that other clubs can learn from, right? At the fundamentals of in terms of how they've built their club. The numbers and finances and all the rest of it is an entirely different debate. But you're right. And the Shane Walsh issue, of course, plays into this. But I just believe on this one, that is another debate entirely. It shouldn't have anything to do with this. Like with 16 lads on the field, the way it's played out, the way it's been handled by the GAA, Paul is right. Like, I mean, in an ideal world, once kind of the whole thing starting to settle down Monday morning, you would have loved for the GAA to come out at the top level and make us say, look, we're convening a meeting today, Director General, President, Head of the CCCC, we're going to have a conversation about this, and we're going to come up with a suite of options that we can explore, right? At the very least, when you say, and Paul said it again there, like, and it was striking me as well, all these people going, oh, the GAA have to do something about this. Why aren't GAA doing something? The GAA is the referee. The GAA is the fourth official. The GAA is the CCCC. The GAA is the two clubs. The GAA is the president and the DG. So, like, someone needs it. So, yeah, I mean, you'd love if there had just been a concentrated reaction from the GAA just to take the heat out of all of this. Because, again, you'd just like to, I mean, the thing that's bothering me that why I'm not outraged by it is that there's no malice here, right? I mean, Kilmacud didn't slip a 16 player on to try and see out the game.
Well, Ken thinks they did.
Yeah, I don't know.
Go back and listen to Monday's show, Michael, and the start of today's show. There are a few people out there who think there might have been something to it. But
mental, right? So they didn't do that, right? The referee didn't, you know, the fourth official... They obviously got caught in the moment or whatever if they didn't see that the 45 should have been retaken. And beyond that, then, okay, you can kind of argue how the GAA at an official level have operated or not operated since. But like, by and large, it's just one of these very unfortunate situations that have developed. That's not to say that there shouldn't be root and branch review and changes made going forward. You would certainly like to see the substitution thing. Now, picture this in another couple of months. If they come up with some idea where, okay, the player has to leave the field completely before a sub can come on, which is pretty simple. Can you imagine now the mayhem and matches and managers going around, get him on. And there's a guy kind of traipsing off the field and he's staggering because he's concussed. And there'll be a whole other debate then about, well, that should have been just let straight on because he was injured. And so, people need to kind of get with this. Like, you know, if you want to avoid situations like this, there's a lot of other things around the organizing of a match that don't happen now that need to happen for it just to become a regular thing, and something like a 16th man being on the field just being completely bizarre.
And on that point, one of the things I always, you just reminded me of this, the way some of the ambiguity that committed into the rule book is due to the fact that there's the inter-county game and then there's the junior club.
Yeah, the club.
It's the same rule book.
Exactly.
And, you know, you introduce a rule at one level and then you have to be able to implement it at the other. And that's where, you know, it can sometimes become complex for the administrators, and that's why they balk at doing that. So that's probably an important point to make in this.
That's why I think there's wiggle room in that 6.44, because it's one thing to say, well, we have, and I agree, I completely believe that it's an All-Ireland bloody final. Like, I mean, you have to address that game different than you would a junior club league game below, where whoever, like Clondroe would finish up with 17 lads on the field by accident, and you know, there's an objection, and you know, the other club, that's different. It is different, but there should be a general set of rules that you would abide by to avoid situations like this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Modern day coaching. What is it all about? Paralysis by analysis. Infiltrated by a load of spoofers and bluffers. Fellas with earpieces stuck in their ears. Psychologists, Clive Woodward, statisticians, dietitians. And as Mick O'Connell alluded to, God save us.
Murph, the way the story has developed this week has led you to do a bit of soul searching.
Yeah.
Largely because as our listeners to this podcast might be aware, if they listened on Monday to the other free to air show, when you and Ken covered it, you weren't too convinced at all that it was going to go anywhere. If you were to plot the course of the story over the week, it would be bit of heat on Monday, fizzled out by Tuesday, dead by Wednesday.
Yeah.
Instead, it's gone completely the other way.
Dead on arrival by Wednesday morning. And that's the exact opposite of what's happened. It's just one of these situations where the GAA way, you know, just the way we do things meets the GAA rule book. And it turns out those two aren't exactly compatible. And in fact, you could nearly say they're in fact entirely opposite. Mm. I can see that rules have been broken. Ken shouts at me on Monday for 10 minutes, rants and raves in my face. I'm wiping his spittle off my face. Such is the anger with which he's shouting at me about this. And it's obvious the rule has been broken. On the other hand, I've seen Kilmacud go up the steps of the... They've lifted the trophy. They've gone back to the clubhouse. They've done all the things that signifies that the game is over, and yet it turns out maybe it's not over.
Yeah.
And so There's this idea in my head that, oh, well, there's a way to deal with this. And, you know, Glenn, they had their chance over
the Malachy O'Rourke way, basically.
Yeah, and it didn't work out after the match. You shake hands and you move on. But the more you talk about it with people who aren't as wedded to the GAA way, the more you realise, well, the rule book is there and it has to mean something. And having an extra player on the field for the deciding moment of the game is a pretty egregious example of
get him off the field,
the rules being broken. So, I mean, what does one do, Owen?
Well, one listens to the World Service chat between Paul Flynn and Michael Foley in its entirety if they want to get a lot more on this one.
Very good.
Also, the league starts up again very soon, so there'll be lots more Paul Flynn on the World Service. The football pod today featured a classic Ken Early metaphor. Eddie Howe as Dr. Frankenstein, anyone?
Eddie Howe has made Newcastle nasty. How nasty Newcastle became masters of the dark arts. Nasty's in capitals. Eddie Howe is no longer Mr. Nice Guy after he spent time in Madrid studying what?
Carlo Ancelotti?
Studying Diego Simeone.
Yeah. All right. That was a much better answer, yes. Carlo, the loveliest man in football.
So it says they're the only team. During his 15 months out of the game, Eddie Howe spent time in Madrid. He did not return enthused by the artwork of Picasso, Dali and Goya. Just a bunch of pig scratching is as far as he's concerned. It was the dark arts of Diego Simeone, he had noted. You know, Eddie Howe standing in the Prado looking at like Goya or Picasso, you know. This tells me nothing about who does what to whom. Ultimately, who annihilates whom? You know, it says nothing to me about that. He wants
it's
to get
black and white in Guernica, and it's fairly depressing. You know, I mean, not as much as watching Newcastle on the regular, but I mean,
Guernica. I call that results. Did they get results? Did they get results or not? Tell me, what was the result in the Spanish Civil War?
Franco won. Republican? No, he was a Republican. What are the nationalists?
The Republicans were the other side,
right?
I think right. The Spanish Republic was the defeated side.
Yeah. Okay. So Franco won. Republicans nil.
Well.
Next question.
You know, it's not about like you know, Franco wasn't there to be popular. The article says they're clipping the wings of the established order and ruffling feathers while they're at it. As Howe himself said, "We are not here to be popular. We are here to abuse chickens."
Huh?
No, he didn't say that. He said, "We are here to compete." Yes. We're not here to be popular. We're here to compete.
Just generally do things to the underside of birds.
Birds, yeah. Just birds are going to get a real hard time. The magpies. No more. Yeah. No more nonsense from the magpies.
What other terrible things could we do to a bird?
They're the only team to take points off league leaders Arsenal at the Emirates this season. They did so by running down the clock and winding up Mikel Arteta. They snarled and they smiled, depending on which would provoke the most irritation. This, I don't know if you saw the game, the Newcastle-Southampton game, but there was a moment when the Southampton player got sent off for like a blatant second yellow card, fouling Elson Maxman, who'd beaten him. And he, for some reason, he complained a little bit. There had just been a kind of an incident before this. Bruno Guimarães had been involved in quite a few little running battles, and he ended up getting fouled by Lianco, the Brazilian centre-half for Southampton, who then stood over him and kind of did some... Bruno was on the ground, and Lianco kind of shouted down at him on the ground, and then there was like some Maxman, I think, got involved. There was like players pushing and shoving. They were standing up for each other. Standing up for each other. And then when this guy got sent off...
He was waved off the field, was he, in a somewhat theatrical way by Jacob Murphy.
Jacob Murphy, yeah, like as though he was standing on the balcony at Buckingham Palace, was giving it this into the face of the guy who just sort of looked at him and was like, "I want to rip your head off, but I can't do that, so I'm just going to have to." So this is, in the hours after Tuesday's 1-0 win at Southampton, with a move for Anthony Gordon gathering pace... We'll get to that. Travelling fans and the city's bars debated the merits of signing the Everton forward. Given he had scrapped with just about every Newcastle player during his side's 1-0 defeat at St. James's Park, many were against the 21-year-old's arrival. Others reasoned that was exactly why he would fit in. he's a shithouse, but he can be our shithouse, was the consensus of those in favour. So it's like, yeah, I mean, to be honest, is that really the thing about Anthony?
Is he?
Yeah,
I was going to say, is he that much of a shithouse?
I mean, he's like a skinny, like.
Wouldn't be the most intimidating figure in the Premier League scene, I wouldn't have thought.
I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, I suppose they've got guys like Joe Linton to, you know, look after him. But, and how they love the, so they love Craig Bellamy, that it's mentioned here, Newcastle fans. Not Alan Shearer, he didn't love Craig Bellamy. But Bellamy was a popular player with fans, as he has been at most of his clubs, because he's a very good player, really. How they love the current vintage too. What Jacob Murphy did in waving goodbye to Southampton defender Diogo Cheleda Char following his late red card was, it should be said, a little glassness. The Toon Army, by contrast, thought it was class. Just like they did Callum Wilson scuffing the penalty spot before Alexander Mitrovic's slip and miss for Fulham this month. Joe Linton listening in to Marco Silva's touchline instruction. The tactical injuries to eat of seconds or by how a timeout. And with increasing popularity, the antics of Jason Tindall, the handsome assistant who turns ugly when needed. One of the coaches even launched a bottle of water at Jurgen Klopp. So Jerome Lascelles has been booked twice this season as a substitute, sending like an non-playing
substitute.
Two games
in a row.
The handsome assistant who turns ugly when needed.
I have heard it noted that Tindall often gets to the other manager first. Have you noticed this? This is the point.
Paul Galvin, the former Kerry footballer, he's taken again Tindall for the last like 3 years. His specific problem, which I think is what you're referring to, is that he gets to the opposing manager and has the handshake before Eddie Howe does.
Goes out of his way to do it. Yeah, that does rub some people up the wrong way.
It's not. Listen, it's not the assistant manager's place.
He'll get ugly when needed as well.
Managers,
he's handsome bastard.
Managers go to managers. Assistant managers go to assistant managers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then the crossover happens. Assistant manager to manager.
That's how it should be.
Assistant manager, but Tindall has eschewed tradition.
It's kind of it's another mind game, isn't it?
Just take a couple of steps back. If Eddie Howe wants to talk to you, he can talk to you. But like, you're up there in his grill for the whole game. Just sit down. Come on, get off me screen, Tindall.
Tindall.
The Toon Army obviously like it.
They like it, do they?
So just to continue, an Everton Sporting colleague moaned that Newcastle had, quote, kicked them off the park during their loss at St. James's. Kicked off? Played off? How's team are doing? Whatever is necessary to win a football match. Kevin Keegan's great side of the mid-90s, of course, were affectionately known as the Entertainers. Everyone liked them. What did they win? Nothing. Howe's quote about not being liked has since been woven into a giant flag unfurled on the Leeds' end. The manager, meanwhile, continues to stitch nastiness into the fabric of his team. I just have to ask, who hurt you, Eddie? Yeah, why? Where is, what's this all about? Like Frankenstein's creature, I think immediately of him. Because, you know, he is, you know, this kind of, he turns on his creator. But like he wasn't like that to begin with. He becomes sort of embittered by, you know, what happened. Believe me, Frankenstein, I was benevolent. My soul glowed with love and humanity. But am I not alone? Miserably alone? You, my creator, abhor me. What hope can I gather from your fellow creatures who owe me nothing? They spurn and hate me. Shall I not then hate them who abhor me? I will keep no terms with my enemies. I am miserable, and they shall share my wretchedness.
That's why, of course, he made The Bride of Frankenstein the sequel.
Well, I think that comes from the bit where he's beseeching Frankenstein to create him a bride. Mm. A creature like himself who will not shun him. But obviously Frankenstein, he does that. But then he's like, I can't do this again. He's joking and he destroys the second creature, prompting a real outbreak. But again, you know, you can see with Frankenstein's creature, he has been, first of all, he didn't ask to be made. Mm-hmm. And then he's rejected and shunned and driven into the shadows and, he's, you know...
Even aesthetically speaking, I mean, could Frankenstein have made a bit more of an effort, you know, taking a couple of bolts out of the neck? You know, I mean, I'm just saying, sure, you created me, but...
Filed off those bolts.
Yeah, but I mean, like, could you not have just, like... The work continues.
The bolts were functional, though, surely, weren't they? No, they were keeping the whole thing together.
No.
They were. The aesthetic serves the pragmatic, you know?
I don't believe so. I believe that he could have filed the bolts down to something much more... Something that could have been hidden by a neckerchief, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, a little cravat.
It's a big old heavy head to keep up there.
Just try and think of Frankenstein's creature wearing a cravat inside a neat shirt with the suit jacket. By the way, a slightly better fitted suit as well. Couldn't have killed the lad. Meaning the legs stop like at the calves. Straight away, he's... I mean, there were a couple of small things that Frankenstein could have done to make the creature's life a little bit more amenable. The passage into polite society a little bit more.
But he wasn't thinking, you know. It was tunnel vision.
It was
all the way.
Just get this thing up, get it working, and then we'll see what happens. And that's what killed him in the end.
But, you know, from the point of view of the creature, you can understand why he feels so angry. It is unfair. And he's had to deal with all of these things. I mean, driven away and into the mountains and the forest.
Sorry, my catwalk, stride isn't quite as fluid as everyone else here, like, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. I literally am a reanimated corpse. So I'm sorry I can't run at, you know, 25 miles an hour.
So when he's coming out with all this stuff, all this, you know, I'm malicious because I'm miserable stuff, at least you can kind of see where he's coming from. Eddie Howe only had to... All he had to contend with was, like, people saying he was maybe... His Bourne routine was too nice and questioning whether he could organise a defence. And now he's back in this, you know... Given it all that, what was this saying at the press conference? I will revenge my injuries. If I cannot inspire love, I will cause fear, chiefly towards you, my archenemy. To you, I swear inextinguishable hatred. I will work at your destruction, nor finish until I desolate your heart so that you shall curse the hour of your birth.
How long was that? I'm just timing it. Was it about 11 minutes? And I think Simon's cut that short. That went even longer than that one.
I mean, it's not murdering a metaphor if you get it in under 15 minutes. On.
Yeah.
That's the Ken Early rule. The golden rule.
SecondCaptains.com, €5 a month plus VAT if you want to be a member of the Second Captains podcast. It's part of a creator network.
It'll be the Acast Creator Network.
Network?
Oh, it's the name of the creator network is never far from my lips. Acast. And indeed my mind and my heart.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.